voice keeps on calling me. Down the road, that's where I'll always be. Every stop I make, I make a new friend. Can't stay for long, just turn around and I'm gone again. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow I'll just keep moving on. So if you wanna join me,
hi, and welcome to the Ask Sue Show. Well, I think we might have a busy show tonight. Do we think that the police are right to be able to stand up for the laws? Where do they actually push the line? Do they really need to do some of the things that they do? I must admit, when I started to do this show tonight and when I started to put it all together, and somebody inboxed me and told me about dogs that were being shot by the police, it sort of chucked me a bit, because I must admit, I live in the UK in Shropshire, and it's not something that I actually hear very often until I started to look on YouTube and Facebook. And then I got in touch with a good friend of mine now, I've just got to say, and their page is called Justy Bully. Now, I may be saying this wrong, and she will have to call in and tell me off if I've got this wrong. Kahula, I think that's right. And she has helped me no end. She sent me a list of all these different pages of so many different people that are literally struggling to come to terms with the fact that their pet dog has been shot. Not for any reason sometimes. It literally just starts off as they've come into the backyard because there may have been alarm or whatever, and they've literally shot the dog. I think the last one I've seen that really did push all boundaries, and I'm not saying any others didn't, was literally when I heard a German Shepherd, a 15-year-old, had been shot. 15. What would be the reason for this? What would make them think like that? Tonight, I'm going to be ringing in into the studio a very good friend of mine who is, and I've just got to write the number down because I haven't even got it down to be able to ring in. But I'm going to be ringing in my good friend Jim. He is one that does literally know what he's talking about. He's let him tell you all about what he is. He's an amazing bloke who knows what he's talking about. He's actually dealing with some of these cases at the moment. So I'm actually going to just try this phone number just to see this line here. Hold on a minute. Hi, area code 916. Hi, how are you doing? Anybody there?
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey, this is Paige. I was just listening to the show. I'm sorry, there's no sound on the chat room. I didn't realize I was in.
Oh, yes, I could see you literally on the line there. Right, I'm not sure what's happening here because I'm actually seeing on the chat room everywhere that there is no sound. Now, this is going to be very, very annoying to me, to say the least. So if everybody, I'm going to have to see if I can get everybody to sign out and sign back in. I'm not sure what's going on. Sign out. Okay. Let me just put it in and see. I tell you what, Paige, just try it. Sign out and then sign back in and see if that works.
Okay. I will. And, yeah, I just turned on the phone because I thought, well, I want to hear this.
Oh, it's okay because Andrea's got sound. That's one.
Okay.
I don't believe this. This is one of the shows that I'm like, I just can't wait to be doing. Do you know what I mean? Right. While everybody's signing
so
out and signing back in.
Okay.
Sorry?
I'm right there with them. All right. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt your conversation. Go ahead.
No, not at all. Not at all. How are you very quickly? Just to tell everybody, this is Saving Bandit's mum. How's things going?
Things seem to be progressing, and I'm thrilled that all this attention is getting out of the media or panelized attention or the word through the radio, and the sites is getting a lot of attention now. And so
fantastic.
I'm thrilled. And I hear sound, and I'm getting echo, so
yes,
I appreciate that.
Yes, listen, it's because you've got the sound obviously back, so that's brilliant news. Listen, I'll catch up with you later, and let me know if you need any more help.
Well, thank you. Yes, yeah, Sandy's gone right now as we talk. She just left to go see Bandit, and so, you know, we're trying our very best. As someone brought to my attention, it's only a few weeks away, and it just really hurts me. So I'm thinking we're on the right path. And bless
yes.
you for doing this.
Fingers crossed for you.
Thank
okay.
you.
Onwards and upwards, and I'll catch up with you soon.
All right, thank you.
Cheers, love. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
And hopefully, if I'm writing thinking, I will have my very good friend with me now, Jim. Hi, how are you doing, Jim?
I'm great, Sue. How are you today?
I was just finding your number to call you from the studio, so thanks for that. How are you doing? Everything going okay?
Everything's doing good here. I wasn't sure if you were calling me or I was calling you, so I figured I'd call you.
Oh, bless you. Now, Jim, first of all, can you please tell everybody, I would say tell everything about you, but we would be here on the two-hour show just telling everybody about that. So you just give them a little bio about yourself, love.
Well, it's me, Jim Crosby. I'm here in Florida in the U.S., and I'm an expert on fatal dog attacks and dog behavior and dog aggression. And I've been involved and am involved in several of the cases looking at use of force against dogs, particularly by police at this point.
Now, am I right in saying that you used to be in the police yourself as well?
Yeah, exactly. I did 23 years with the Sheriff's Department here in Jacksonville and retired as a lieutenant, which on your end of the world would be like a full inspector. And, that's part of, you know, what the things it adds in here is I'm not a person that's typically critical of the police. In fact, if anything, I'm more likely to be reflexively defensive of them because I was one for many years. And
yeah,
part of the result of that is that I know the training they get and don't get, and I understand how their world works. So I can kind of look at it from both sides now.
Well, to be honest, that's one of the first things I was going to say to you, like when we first start the show. I just want to let all of the police know that we are not against the police. I am more than aware that there is cases where there is nothing else that can be done but to shoot a dog if it is absolutely extremely necessary. There is no other way of stopping this dog, especially if there's children or adults or animals or whatever. Lives are at risk. Obviously, there has got to be times when they can't do anything else, Jim, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and it's just like with people, you know, you don't want to shoot any people, but if it's, as a police officer, you know, using your firearm is the last choice, but if it's shoot one person and save a whole school full of children, guess which one you pick.
Yeah, exactly. So you've been dealing with some of the cases that we're going to be talking about tonight. Has this just recently been, Jim, or has it been going for quite some time? You know, because it just seems to me, like, I must admit, it's like if you buy a red car or a red car with pink spots, suddenly everybody would have one. And as soon as you go to investigate something, suddenly you seem to find loads. Is
That's
it literally
true,
just started, or have they all, has it been going on for quite a while?
I'm not sure. I think it's probably a combination of a couple of things. You know, there have always been intersections, if you will, of where police officers and other officials, postmen and UPS people and whatever, come in conflict with dogs. It's always happened. It always will. Some of those cases go better than others. I mean, and I know in my career, there were a number of occasions where I came in potentially in conflict with a dog that wasn't the most friendly in the world. Fortunately, I never used deadly force against any such dog and was never placed in that position. I'm not sure if we've got more of these happening now or if simply people are more sensitive to it because of the publicity that's been around some of the incidents. The other thing that may be part of it is that with the Internet and Twitter and Facebook and the huge ability to reach out from literally all around the world in just a flash, maybe it's just becoming easier for us to hear about these when they're happening. I don't know, because there really hasn't been a quantification that I'm aware of how many per year happen by who and where. I do know if you put in, like we were talking the other day, if you put in dog shooting police into Google, it comes up with something over 120 million hits. So those all didn't just happen this year.
Yeah. It's really difficult because, I mean, we've got so many different stories. I mean, I must admit, I had, I'm going to say this again, but I'm probably going to say this wrong, Justice Bullitt and Kahula, hopefully she'll be calling in. And she's helped me, and she sent me a load of links of all these different dogs that have been shot. And I looked at the list, and there was loads of like pages, groups, and everything on Facebook. And there's loads of different things. But the main thing is that we've had police that may have had, an alarm go off or whatever, and they're doing their job. They go in and check in the house. And they've gone through the back gate to check, obviously, the back of the property or whatever. And there's been a dog in the backyard, and he's come up to them. And the police are just, I don't know how to put it, really, if it's scared or what it is, but they are just shooting these dogs. Now, to be fair, I know my dogs. I mean, I've got a Rottweiler and I've got two Labrador Crosses. If you go to the back gate, yep, they're protecting. Where does it come to the point that it's a pet and it's protecting and then it's their safety, Jim? Where is this line? Because I think most dogs, I'm not going to say all, but most dogs are protecting their property when they're there. And a lot of us have them for that.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that we need to really work on. To begin with, I can tell you from my own experience, having been there and also from talking to officers, your typical police officer gets no training on how to deal with a difficult animal. They're just assumed that, I guess it's assumed that you know it from divine intervention or something. But there's no training given anybody that I'm aware of, nothing concerted. Now they're beginning to be a little bit of some, and I'm actually putting some together myself, but in the past there hasn't been, so that's been a tool the officers haven't been given, even though they're given extensive training on everything else you can think of. That said, though, there's, you know, dogs are going to be naturally protective of their own property, yet police officers also have legitimate reasons to go on that property. So we've got to work on giving the officers the information they need in a couple of real specific places. Number one is how to perceive a valid threat from a dog. Most dogs, and not all, and there's always one that's gonna blow the curve, if you will. Most dogs, if they feel threatened by you, they will run and charge at you, but dogs have a personal space just like people. And most of the times they'll run up, and if you watch, they'll run up and stop 3 or 4 feet away to see what you're going to do, because really, unless there's a screw loose or they've been encouraged elsewise or whatever, they really don't want to get in a fight. They want you to go away because you're something that's frightening them or worrying them or concerning them. So in their minds, they come up and give this aggressive display and then stop to see if you're going to back off. Because if you back off and they can back off, survival-wise, the species goes on its merry way and nobody gets hurt. So one of the things that we need to do is educate officers how to perceive the distance, that reaction, that behavior, and how to, the safest thing to do is if you see something like that, you basically brace yourself and freeze and don't look straight at the dog, but don't turn around and run, and don't keep coming to it, and both of you are probably going to stop, and then it's very common that you'll be able to slowly back off and go back to the edge. Now, the police officer has to do his job, but sometimes the level of response to that job has to be different. We know here in the States that when it comes to silent alarms at homes, somewhere between 95 and 99% of them are bad. Every police officer out there knows that for the most part, most residential alarms are false alarms. It's been set off accidentally, the wind did it, whatever. So if you pull up to a house where you've been 37 times, or maybe you've never been, you see that there's a sign that says beware of dog. You look and you see a doggy bowl. We have to teach these officers, okay, let's stop, fellas, and think. Look around. Yeah, you're going to look to see if there's a burglary happening in progress, and every once in a while there is, but take a second, rattle a fence, and go, here, doggy. Now, if there's a dog, then you back up and you see, okay, can I see the back of the house from the neighbor's yard? Can I make friends with this dog and get into the yard safely? Is the dog just going to stay away from me? If there has to be a confrontation, instead of going to deadly force first, pepper spray, oleocapsicum spray, which the police carry, is extremely effective with dogs. I have never seen a dog get sprayed in the face with pepper spray that didn't stop, kind of wrinkle its nose and look at itself with its eyes and paw at its face and wind up walking off and usually rubbing its face on the grass and trying to make the stinging go away. It's non-lethal. Yeah. It's very effective. There's no permanent injury involved. And the police officer can go about his business, and the dog will be fine in about 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So we need to inform the officers on these less than lethal alternatives and when that is more reasonable. You walk up to the place, you see they got to beware of dog sign out, you rattle the fence and whatever, but nothing happens. Okay, so you're going in the fence. You still pull out your spray in one hand. You can have your gun in the other hand for just in case there's a real bad human. And you're ready, and you're prepared, and you're mentally ready not to get surprised if the dog's asleep or whatever. It's just a matter of giving information, training, and alternatives.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's not happening. Too often these people are just going straight for deadly force.
Yeah. And you saying that, I mean, I read one. Now, I'm not sure if you actually told me about it or if I found it myself, but there was one, a 15-year-old German Shepherd. The police had had a call out. The burglar alarm had gone off. They'd gone through the back gate to go and check the back of the property, like you say, you know, gone in. This dog had come up to it, and they'd shot it. 15-year-old, and all it was a door ajar.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is this, you know, how much easier would it have been for when that 15-year-old dog came around the corner to just give it a quick squirt with the pepper spray? Or even try looking at it and going, no, sit, or no, bad dog. Sometimes they'll stop and go, oh, wait a minute. You know, there's a very clear what's called a matrix of force that here in the U.S. is taught to police, and it's you know, we're allowed here to use whatever force is reasonably necessary to effect an arrest or to protect yourself or whatever. And that starts with, excuse me, Ms. Davies, I have a warrant for your arrest. Please place your hands behind your back so I can handcuff you, and we can go down and get this taken care of at the station. And you go, oh, thank you very much, Lieutenant Crosby. I will be happy to go with you, and we can get this, and we'll both go on in a civilized manner, which is how it usually works in Britain. Here, you wind up with, Ms. Davies, I have to take you under arrest, and you turn around and swing at me. And then we go through the minimum necessary force, whether it's simply telling you knock it off or grabbing you and handcuffing you or spraying you with a chemical agent or even using a taser on you. But there's a lot of real estate between, hello, Ms. Davies, would you come with me, and bang, you're dead.
Yeah.
We teach that with humans. We have to give these guys the information to understand that although dogs aren't human, they're still people's property, they're still people's companions. And let's try using our brain. We're supposed to be the ones with the big brains. Let's try using them and using reasonable levels of force instead of jumping straight off the deep end.
Exactly. Now, I must admit, I mean, I'm thinking, like you said, police are charging into properties and literally knocking the door down, and then they are shooting the pet. Now, okay, I saw one, for instance, and this is, again, giving you another situation, but I saw one where a guy was being arrested. They pretty well knocked the door down to get in. This guy was being arrested. There was a mum and a child in the house, and they literally shot the dog. Now, is the dog right to be shot when, at the end of the day, that dog is protecting the family? And does that need to be done in front of a child? What must that child have, I mean, never mind the fact that they've shot the dog, but what that child has seen?
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got to throw some responsibility some responsibility back on the owner too, because you're going in to arrest Daddy. He's a bad guy. If they're kicking his door down, it means he's done something pretty serious. If Daddy had been stupid and gotten shot, that would have victimized the child even more. And yet that's Daddy's responsibility. I'm not saying they should be blasting the dogs at all, but what I do say is that in certain circumstances, depending on the severity of the incident, you've got to judge your response. If the SWAT team is going into a house with an armed suspect that's liable to open up on them with an automatic weapon, I don't expect them to necessarily take the time to make friends with the dogs, because that's just dumb. That puts the officers and the other people in the house and the neighborhood and everybody at risk. But if you're chasing a shoplifter that stole a case of Cokes from the local grocery, and he jumps over a fence, and as you're running up to the fence, you've got other officers driving around, and as you're running up to the fence, you look and you see a dog bowl and stuff in the backyard, maybe you should stop a second and get your buddies to help you catch him on the other side instead of blasting through the yard and then shooting a dog that now has had two people run through his yard. It needs to be weighed on how serious the offense is. And if the guy's running from you and jumps into a yard with a dog, maybe you're better in just waiting and letting the dog handle the situation. Been there and done that, and actually had to have owners come out and grab their dog to rescue a bad guy out of a tree. The bad guy was up there screaming, help, help, police, help, help, because he was about to be eaten up by the dog. Good dog. You have to weigh these situations. If you're going into a house for a bad guy, but you know you've done your surveillance and you know there's a dog there, maybe you should have one of your officers that has a big can of spray or even one of those rubber bullet guns, whose entire job is just to look for the dog or dogs and neutralize them in the most gentle manner or in the safest manner possible.
Yeah, I was just going to say that to you. Could they, I mean, I have watched quite a few of the YouTube videos, And I think to myself, in the one, they must have had 20 police, right? Mm-hmm. Could they not have, like you said, just had one or two officers literally to cope with? You know, they always say, you know, make sure that the family's safe. Hey, hold on a minute. Mm-hmm. The dogs are part of a family. So can they not put, it's for the safety of the dog, for the safety of the family, for the safety of the officers, can they not put somebody and say, right, excuse me, your job is, if there's a dog, I don't care if they've got a handful of treats or a piece of steak in their hand, do you know what I mean? Anything, you know?
I think it would be very reasonable to have at least one person on an entry team that is not only trained in the normal stuff, but has some extra training. And, you know, again, very rarely do you go in real life, do you go kicking in a door where you haven't got some sort of surveillance or information, especially now when you've got people booby-trapping places and whatever. So you probably know whether there's a dog there. So if there is a dog there, then, you know, in an entry team, you've got the guy with the thing that bashes the door, and you've got a guy with a shield, and you've got the first guy with the weapon, and you've got this guy doing this, and you've got somebody who's assigned to to isolate possible witnesses and keep them covered and safe, so just until you're sure that they're not suspects. So you can have one guy whose responsibility is to keep the dog off everybody else, and if that means that you send him in his regular police gear, but from the top of his boots to his belt, he's got bite-resistant pants on. I have a pair of chaps that they're meant to be snake chaps, but I use them when evaluating something dangerous or that's killed somebody, because if even a huge dog bites him, I'll get bruised, but I'm not going to get hurt. So there's you can have your one guy that's got your dog-proof pants on. And his job is that if there's a dog, while everybody else deals with the humans, his job is to subdue, control, back off, lay hands on whatever, the dog.
Yeah.
Not unreasonable.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is, they obviously, like you say, they do the surveillance because obviously, for instance, if it's a drug person, a drug dealer or whatever, they obviously will know that he's a drug dealer. They'll be watching who's coming and who's going. Surely to goodness they could have found out that there was a dog or something. And let's face it, what percentage in the US is actual dog owners anyway? How many people in
something
the US have actually in
something like 3/4 of the people in the US own a dog or a pet at least, and I think it's something like 2/3 of those are dogs. So there's a huge number of dogs out there. Most
exactly.
Animals. So,
and let's face it, if you're a crook, you're going to want a dog that's going to protect you. So you're not going to expect to have, well, I'll say this and then I'll be shot down for this myself. It's not probably going to be a poodle, do you know what I mean, or a little nice little cute thing that's going to come and lick your hand. It's usually going to be something of defensive to protect them.
Yeah, exactly. And you can expect that if the person is irresponsible enough to have cross police attention to the point that they're kicking in his door, then he's probably not a responsible dog owner that's taught his dog to be friendly and give kisses and say hello and so forth. The dog's probably got issues too. That's a reasonable expectation. And again, most of these cases or most police actions, unless it's simply robbery suspects that bailed out in front of you and you're in hot foot pursuit, you've done some surveillance. You have an idea whether there are animals there. If there's drugs, who knows? There may be, you've done some surveillance to figure out whether this particular dope dealer is likely to be armed, because you want to know in advance what kind of weapons you may be going up against. You want to know if it's some kind of a violent crime, if they're liable to have explosives. So you've done some research. Use that research and plan. Okay. We know this guy has this giant standard poodle named Ralph that's been attack trained by the kennel down the street. So your job is to take Ralph. Everybody else will worry about the humans.
Yep. Yep. And this is the thing. I mean,
it's just
this
logic.
Exactly. And surely half of that is common sense. Because, I mean, I'm thinking about the people that got that child. Obviously, that dog must have been I'm going to say child-friendly, because it was in the house with a child.
Or at least child-tolerant, so...
Yeah, do you know what I mean? So, but the thing was, it seemed so instant just to shoot the dog. Just so instant. It wasn't even...
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are just horrendous. I mean, one lady, now, I know there's one lady in the chat room who's going to call in shortly called Christine, but I know there was another one where apparently this woman was actually holding her dog, had literally just grabbed hold of the dog, and there was another one. The one got shot, and the other one literally got hit by the bullet as it was going to the other one. And she was holding
mm-hmm.
the dog.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's been some ridiculous cases. There's I'm aware of that one. And the problem is that once you start throwing bullets around, you can never be real sure where they're going. There was a case,
exactly.
I don't remember if it was 2 or 3 years ago, and I believe it was in the state of Connecticut, but it was in the northeastern U.S., where two police officers were going up to handle some kind of a call, and there was a dog in a carport, like an open garage. And somehow it led to that there was a 12-year-old girl that had come out and was trying to grab the dog. One of the officers felt threatened. He wound up firing a shot. The shot went through the dog, hit the concrete, ricocheted up, and killed his partner. So here the officer reacting to the dog has killed the other police officer. Now, that's something that he's going to take to his grave, but how bad could it have been if instead he'd simply, again, pepper sprayed the dog? I know in my training and in my time on the street, I've been pepper sprayed by my own officers more than once or twice. It hurts like the dickens, but you live through it. That's why when they give us pepper spray, you get sprayed, so you know you're not going to die, and you know it's just really uncomfortable, and that way you just don't curl up and start crying on the end of the street. Instead, you can continue to do your job. So if in that case a less lethal alternative had been followed, then there would be one police officer whose family would not be missing their loved one, and another police officer that wouldn't be dragging that guilt and problem around with him for the rest of his life, and a little girl who wouldn't have had her dog shot right in front of him. Everybody would have won.
Yeah. I'm reading the chat as well. Sorry.
Yeah, I think one of the big things is that we need to work on people understanding, interpreting, and logically replying to levels of perceived threat. Not every dog wants to bite you, and
no.
a lot of them are just scared and or trying to protect their property. And so let's again use our brains.
Yeah, but Jim, don't you find that, you know, let's face it, we've had a lot. I mean, what with Lennox and everything else, and we've had this where it's pit bull lookalikes and blah blah blah. But do you find that a lot of police are judging the dog just because of its breed, not necessarily because it's nasty? I'm not being funny. You know, pit bulls are strong dogs and they come charging at you and they may be friendly, but I'm sitting on a garden fence for a minute here, and don't everybody go mad at me in the chat room. I am just got to chuck me aside. I'm stood by the gate. I'm a police officer. I'm stood by the gate, and you've got a pit bull that's coming at you at a rate of knots. Is it always easy to be able to tell what they're going to do?
No. It doesn't really matter what kind of dog. A big dog is way scarier to us than a little dog. But I'll tell you, when I get called, and I've got some appointments this week, when I get called to go work with somebody who's having aggression problems with their dog, if they tell me they have a little dog, I know there's a real good chance I'm going to get bitten. Where if there's a big dog, just because the way they react, I know there's a good chance that I can work out and negotiate and have a discussion with this dog on a low-key level and probably not get bitten. So just you can't just guess based on the size of the dog. And there was a case here in the States last year where, once again, a police officer shot a little Westie that was nibbling at his – that was snapping at his ankles. Give me a break. You don't need a gun to take out a 7-pound dog.
Ridiculous.
At very worst, a good swift kick and the dog is going to run away. Don't start throwing lead.
Yep. Yeah. Do you know what though, Jim? And on finding these groups and like pages and everything else, I have got to say to you, I even found one where it was a cat. I mean, that just blew my mind. I must admit, I've lost the link. I've got to find the link. But if anybody's seen this, there was something about a cat had been shot as well. I mean, and then all I think was you was telling me about, was it a stag or something you said that had been shot?
I'm sorry, you were breaking up here. I'm not aware of any cats being shot, although it would not surprise me. And if someone's shooting a cat, it better be the size of, an ocelot or better before you start using a gun against it, because it's going to be, if nothing else, the ribbing at the station later is going to be fatal.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, here's the guy who's afraid of the kitty cat. You know, crying out loud. But, there's no telling what kind of response you're going to get sometimes. But, and I understand that, for instance, there are people who are afraid of cats. It's not logical, but they are, who are afraid of dogs. But when you put on a uniform to be an animal control officer or a police officer or whatever, you've got to put that stuff away, you know. You can't shoot a person because that's dressed up as a clown because as a child you had a bad experience and are afraid of clowns. That doesn't wash.
Yeah. See, the other thing I was thinking as well, we the police actually work with German Shepherds and different types of dogs, and I have actually seen some of the police. I mean, let me just tell everybody, I am in the UK, so I'm trying to work with US, even though I've never been there, so just bear with me. But obviously I've seen where the police have actually, some of them have actually had pit bull dogs working with them as well, and all of these dogs are working with them and are actually fighting to protect the police officers. But then when a family has got a dog and it's protecting them, they are shooting them.
Well,
so surely, to goodness, they can understand the protecting part of the dog when it's actually protecting them as well.
See, now, and that's where you do wind up with a conflict even within the police. I had an officer that worked for me that was afraid of dogs, and he made a comment because we had a canine out helping us search for the suspect. That made a comment in my hearing that, well, that dog gets confused and starts coming at me, I'm going to shoot him. And I looked at the officer and said, you shoot that dog, I'm going to put you in jail and have you fired. Because, number one, that dog is better trained and worth more money than you are. And number two, just because you're an idiot doesn't mean you get to do what you want. So there sometimes there's a conflict there. I'm not going to say it never happens, but I would bet if we could do some research, we'd find that very, very few of the officers that are shooting dogs have ever been assigned to canine duty or worked with their own large dogs. So, again, it's a matter of people who are not educated and people who don't have a skill set of being able to understand what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. Now, obviously, to say you're trained for these circumstances is an understatement, but how difficult would the training be, Jim, to actually put these police through a course or something so that they could assess the signs before they have to shoot the dog? And the other thing I need to ask you is, do they actually carry this pepper spray or whatever with them at all times, or is it just something, it's up to the officer if they want to carry it?
Typically, if the pepper spray is issued to you, it's got a little holster, it goes on your belt, so it goes with you everywhere that you go, just like your gun or your collapsible baton or your flashlight or anything else that goes on your Batman utility belt. So typically, and departments can easily, if they have it at discretion, they could easily say, okay, you have to have your pepper spray on you all the time. It's simple. You just, it takes just that long. You put out a memo and say, if you don't have it, you're getting written up. Most departments require the officers to carry various kinds of less lethal defensive items such as batons, pepper spray. A lot of them have tasers now. Everybody carries handcuffs to restrain somebody safely. So those less lethal tools are already available in 99% of the places. As far as teaching the officers, I'm looking at putting together what's probably going to be like a four-hour course, which is going to be pretty in-depth, and it'll address everything from the basic behavior signs to the options of less lethal tool. They keep tripping over that. But because you can't guarantee anything is not lethal. I mean, you might have a person or a dog that's, for crying out loud, allergic to your aftershave and could die from it. But less lethal, you know, those things not likely to cause a fatality or even serious injury in most cases. And it's just a matter, I think, of getting the officers to think about it and to realize these tools are there and to give them a framework to work with it and suggestions just to get them thinking. So it doesn't have to be, you're not talking about spending 40 hours or 80 hours or whatever teaching them to be doggy behaviorists or behavior analysts or experts on everything. It's just a matter of giving them enough information to understand that many of the tools they've already been taught apply. Police officers are taught, you know, to pay attention to human body language so you can protect yourself. They're taught a defensive stance so you can keep yourself from harm. That same defensive stance you would take with a human will also help defuse a human-dog interaction, that angled stance where you're not directly facing them. Little things like this, they've got this toolkit. They just need to understand how it translates. So we're not talking about starting from zero with a brand new language or a brand new set of things that they've never heard of. It's getting them to pay attention to how what they know will translate. And they can, so then they already know how to use it in other situations, so the transition will be easy.
See, the thing is, after what you've just said, I'm thinking to myself, well, in that case, like you're saying, you know, they should be able to be trained to be able to see what's going to, you know, what's coming, what's happening with the dogs and stuff. So let's put it in a different perspective then, Jim. If they've got a human charging at them, right, we don't know this person properly. All we can see is this human is just charging at them. They've got, you can't see, they've got long sleeves on, they could have a knife, they could have a gun, we don't know, can't see. Does that mean we can just blow them away because of the fact of we don't know what they're going to do? And what training are the police given? You know, what are you told as a police officer to go about with that human charging at you? What is the training that's put forward for that?
Well, if you've got a human in that situation, for instance, you can't see his hands, and he's coming at you openly, aggressively, and he's not responding to verbal commands, when he gets within a certain distance, if you've done everything you can, because you're dealing with a human, to make it clear to this person, stop what you're doing, or I'm going to use deadly force against you, you can go ahead and plug them. Because at that point, you have, you know, their body posture, their physical actions, everything is telling you that they intend you harm. You still have to be able to explain later why you thought this. Yes, the person had their hands in their hoodie, and they were screaming and yelling and coming straight at me, and I told them 27 times or whatever, stop or I'll shoot. The guy got within 10 feet of me, and I shot twice. And at that point, he fell down, and the threat was removed. In that kind of a case, you're not, it depends on the situation. If you've got the time to deploy one of these other weapons, then you can. Now, if you have somebody walking rapidly towards you instead of dead run, and you can see their hands, and they're spouting off, you know, talking crazy stuff, and hearing the voices, and they keep approaching you and don't respond, then you are justified in responding to keep them from harming you, but that body language and physical ability, you are, as a professional, expected to realize, oh, this person may be mentally unstable. So instead of grabbing your gun, you grab the pepper spray or you pull out your taser and you use a less lethal method, because this is a disturbed person that's not thinking right and not responding. If a person is walking, and again, third situation, person is walking towards you and they're obviously teed off and angry and they're kind of gesticulating around, but you can tell that they're basically blowing off steam and just running their mouth, and you tell them to knock it off and they're kind of walking towards you, but they're not charging you, then you spray them and you grab them and you put handcuffs on them. So you have that training to judge the difference between the guy that really made the, and it all may be the same person on a different day. But you're taught to make those very quick assessments. And so, again, if we teach people, you see the dog running at you, but he's kind of looking around and he's barking and he's, but his tail is down and his ears are back and he's looking like he's just rather not be there. Okay, freeze. Back off and have your pepper spray out. If the dog is slobbering and his tail is up and his ears are up and this is a constant dog that's on full attack mode, okay, you've got a bigger problem here. Get thyself to the other side of the fence quickly or defend yourself. But, for instance, there was a shooting here in the U.S. where the officer's on one side of the fence and he shot a dog in the next yard on the other side of the fence. Explain to me how that dog's a threat.
See, don't even start me off, because I can feel an Ask Sue rant coming on. But the thing is, though, what do they actually get for this, Jim? I've got to read some of the comments that are just flying past me on this chat here. Mm-hmm. Andrew said, but the problem is they do not respect the dog or see it as a living being. It's that you need to change. Pebbles put, Jim should video this 4-hour course and make it available to all police departments. So we'll come to that in a minute, Jim. Paige has put, I think they should do a yearly refresher course, just like your driving license.
And police officers are required in pretty much every jurisdiction to go through yearly what we call in-service training to keep their certifications active, so that they're brought up to speed on changes in the law and changes in use of force policy and things that our Supreme Court does or whatever. So those opportunities are there.
And the thing is, there's so many instances. I could give you instances all night, but one I heard that, and Andrea's just actually mentioned it a minute ago in the chat room, about the dog that was actually on a choker, pole. A dog pole?
Yeah.
And it was on the pole, and this dog person was holding the dog, and the police literally went round this person to shoot the dog on a pole.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go into real details because that's still an open case, but I'm actively involved in that case.
Thank goodness.
I'm working with the people out there. That's in the state of Colorado, which is up in the mountains in the central western part of the U.S. There are some real concerns with that. I can tell you that, because it's public information, that the officer involved has been charged with felony animal cruelty, the officer that did the shooting. Which means that in the U.S., he could go to prison for a year or more for his actions. He's been charged, not convicted. Situation is still unfolding, but there are some very serious concerns with that situation. And like I said, I'm directly involved with the attorneys on that case. So that is not going to just disappear.
Yeah. Now,
we're hoping that that case will actually lead us to be able to make permanent differences in other places based on the precedent set by this one.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to read, Jennifer's just put, police officers should be required to turn on the lights or horn or something to notify homeowners that they are there, especially if it is dark and the officer has no lights on. This is not fair for the police to creep round in a yard at night and shoot. Jennifer, I can sort of agree with that, but the thing is, police officers sometimes have to go in the dark simply because they need to be catching somebody, and like Jim said, that has done something they shouldn't. And let's face it, I'm not, now before, again, everybody starts, I am not saying that the police officers are right for shooting these innocent dogs, and there has been times when they have been innocent. But on the other side, the police are going into houses that these people have actually put themselves in this situation too. The owners are as responsible, because if they hadn't have been, I was going to say something really bad then, naughty, at the end of the day, there would be no reason for the police to be going in the house anyway.
Yeah, and although I agree with you with one small caveat that, yeah, there, again, the officers have to use good sense on judging when you make what's called a tactical approach, when you're sneaking up in the dark and going, hello, I'm right here, how are you this morning?
Yeah.
Now, if I'm creeping through and have been there and done it, creeping through the dark, armed to the teeth, looking for a murder suspect, that's one thing. If I've gotten a call of their stereos too loud or something minor like that, then my approach can be a lot different, and I can go to the front door, and if I see a dog in the front yard, I can actually beep my horn or maybe even have my dispatcher call the people at home and say, would you please answer your door? There's a police officer that wants to talk to you. He doesn't want to get in conflict with your dog, and obviously your stereo is too loud that you can't hear him beeping his horn.
Yeah.
But again, it's you know, as a police officer, you're given a very tough job. You have to make a lot of decisions based on limited information very quickly that may have long-term consequences. So what we need to do is give these officers all of the tools they could possibly use to make those in the best way they can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without excusing those that are just simply acting like idiots. And there's a few of them out there, too. You get them in every large organization.
The thing is, and I have got to say to the people in chat room, Jim, you're absolutely right. We have got to understand, we have got idiots in every form of jobs and careers and everything. But the thing is, though, Jim, these people, surely, and I've got to read what Paige has just put, maybe they should have an IQ test on them before they are allowed to become an officer.
Maybe. I am not against any kind of process of weeding out people that are potentially problems or that can't make decisions under pressure. In most places there are like in my department, I was actually part of the training process, and there were officers that we recommended, I'm sorry, this guy shouldn't be trusted with anything sharper than a pencil. No, he doesn't have what it takes to be a police officer. Get rid of him.
Yeah.
So I'm never against doing everything you can to winnow out potentially bad matches to especially a very stressful and difficult job like being a police officer, especially when it may risk someone else's liberty or their life to have the wrong person in that job.
Yeah. So on that score, Jim, let's just go off the dog subject for a minute. How long do they have to train to become a police officer, and how hard is the police officer training to actually get there in the first place? Let's never mind the dog situation. I'm talking on the whole.
I can tell you that, for instance, my department here and in my state, which is Florida, the academy itself is somewhere around 1,000 hours of class time. I know it used to be 760, but I believe they jumped it up to 900 and something. And that's just rear end in the seat, or going to the range, and that's just basic training. Then when you come out of basic training, you go into the first stage of field training, where with my department, you spent at least 30 days at a time with three different senior officers, basically working with them and having them giving you on-the-job training. And at first, and trust me, at first you get a brand-new rookie, you don't let him do much of anything by himself except go to the bathroom. And then as you proceed through that training, you get to a point where you're finished with the hands-on training. Then you're put by yourself, but your supervisor and the officers around you are watching and working with you to help you continue to learn. And usually there's at least a year's probation where they can fire you simply for almost anything if you turn out to be unsuitable. So that's the way it works here in Florida. Some departments have less, but you know that at least I think that 1,000 hours is pretty much standard across the U.S. for any police department, for any police officer in any state. I know there in the U.K. you have police academies. I don't know how many hours they go, but I suspect they probably go at least as long as our guys. And so there are training. And granted, there's a lot they have to learn about law and force and all kinds of stuff. First aid,
yeah.
CPR, but it's not, and it's typically not easy to get hired in the first place to even go into the academy, because in a lot of cases it's a pretty prestigious job. You get to drive fast, you get to run red lights, you get to wear a gun, you get the cool uniform, you get the toys. There's plenty of people that want to do it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, for the most part, there is a lot to do with there is a lot there as far as trying to winnow out bad candidates. But you still, like with anything else, have people that'll fool you. And you have people that when you finally put them on their own, they get a big head and get the authority complex, and you wind up with them being less than you thought they were going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. See, now you just mentioned in the UK. Now, obviously, in the UK, we don't have the guns. Actually, I'll rephrase that. We do have guns, but obviously some are illegal and blah, blah, blah. But the police don't carry guns, not unless they're like riot police and blah, blah. We have people that obviously have to go into to different situations of the police, that they go into situations and there's dogs. And we haven't, I'm not going to say we haven't got over here altogether, because I haven't found any in the UK that police have shot a dog, except actually I did find one, and it was a Staffordshire Bull Terrier that literally had gone to this chap, took a chunk out of his leg, and started running, had had a go at somebody else, and then got towards a park. And obviously they were concerned for the safety of the kids and everybody on the park, and they shot it on the park. Now,
correctly, on that case, they actually called in one of your special armed officers to do that, because the regular street officers didn't have anything, so they called one of your special squad or whatever people to do that. So
yeah,
they even went so far as to have to call a specially qualified person to judge whether using force was proper in that situation.
But then I like to play devil's advocate on the show, Jim, and I'm going to say to you, so from the time that the police officer took to get there to the scene, imagine the devastation that could have happened to that dog. Now, apparently, if I'm right, if I can remember, I should have got the link up to be able to read to you, but I'm sure that they did actually pepper spray him or something, but it didn't stop him.
Yeah, well, that happens once in a great while. That's why I said 99%. With humans,
yeah,
for instance, pepper spray is effective between 85 and 90% of the time. And every once in a while you get a person, whether it's because of their physical makeup or because they're drugged out or whatever, you spray them and they wipe their eyes and go, "You shouldn't have done that," and the fight is on. You know, so that happens from time to time. But somehow, in most of the cases, you know, in that case, it might have been better if there had been an armed officer closer or right there, but somehow your guys in the UK are handling an awful lot of dogs. You know, the UK's got, what, a population of 30 million or so, is it? Something like that?
I think so, something like that, yeah. Too many.
So, and lots of those 30 million people have dogs, and not all of them are well-behaved. So somehow your officers are doing something other than shooting the dogs. So,
exactly.
So that tells me that the possibility is there.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it's just the British. I don't think it's just that British dogs are just that much more polite than American dogs. That would be the Canadian dog. You know,
yeah.
The Canadians are always so polite, but and I doubt that the British dogs are quite as rude as the French dogs, and I'm going to get in trouble for that. But, you know, but I really don't think there's a big difference there, that the dogs somehow go, oh, I'm in Shropshire, and I have to be a polite dog, whereas if I was in Massachusetts, I could just simply bite this fellow.
The thing is, there's obviously going to be the criminals in the UK that have got dogs trained to protect them, because obviously they're doing stuff they shouldn't. And the same things are going to apply here as in America. You are going to have stronger dogs, and you know, I'm not going to name them because I'll be told off again. But you know, we're going to have big dogs that are there, powerful, and they're trained to tackle anybody that comes through that door.
Mm-hmm. And we have seen it here in the U.S. where there are literally dogs that have been taught. Here in the U.S., most city police wear solid dark blue top and bottom uniform. And most deputy sheriffs in the counties wear dark green top and bottom. And we have seen cases where dogs have been taught by drug dealers to chase and go after anybody wearing dark blue or dark green.
Yeah.
So that happens. But, you know, those situations, I think, are less common than the situation where we have, for instance, in the Colorado case, where the police and animal control were simply called because it was a loose dog. It wasn't arresting somebody. It wasn't hitting a drug den. It wasn't going after somebody who's been stockpiling weapons and trying to resist taxes, or somebody who's some kind of a racist weirdo that wants to foment revolution. It's, you know, most of the encounters are people's pets, and you know, there's a big difference in how you should be approaching those different kinds of cases.
Yeah. Now, I need to ask you. Two people have asked me to ask you now. Nitro Foundation is actually in the chat room. Welcome to the show, and also Beth. Sue, please ask Jim what law-abiding pet-owning citizens like us can do to enact change, proper training to protect our companion animals. Now, we'll let you answer that one, and then we'll have a quick song. So answer that one first, Jim.
Okay. The biggest thing that people can do is to locally pressure your local politicians and police officials to push for this kind of training, and use the incidences where it has been an issue. Police departments hate negative publicity and hate looking bad, and understandably they hate looking bad because most of the time they're doing good. So go to your local police chief and say, from the last case out west, here is a case where a police officer shot a dog unjustifiably, and the owners were awarded $600,000 in damages. How much do you want to pay in damages when one of your guys messes up, or would you rather get this training to your guys so that if somebody does something stupid, you can wash your hands of it and say, we taught our people what to do. I can't stand there all the time and make them do it, so this is on the officer, not on us. We have done what we can do. Use that local pressure. Go to your police chief. Go to your city council. If you've got access to people on a state level, go to your state politicians and say, this is something that should be included in police training.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. Now, I've just got one more question before we have a song. Christine, do you want to call in to the show, and we'll get you on literally live with Jim straight after the song. Is that okay, Jim?
That's fine.
Okay. So listen, everybody, if you are sitting in the chat room listening to myself and Jim and thinking, hold on a minute, I'm going to ask a question, I've got something to say, or you somebody that has actually had to deal with one of these situations, please give us a call in, 347-327-9694. That's 347-327-9694. Or you can call in from the UK on 001-347-327-9694. And I'm going to play this song. It was one of my favourites. And this is for all the dogs that I've passed over and due to some trigger-happy police. Back in a minute.
The whispers in the morning of lovers sleeping tight, all rolling by like thunder now. As I look in your eyes, I hold on to your body and feel each move you make. Your voice is warm and tender, a love that I could not forsake, 'cause I am your lady and you are my man. Wherever you reach for me, I'll do all that I can.
And welcome back to the Ask Sue Show. We have had quite a good first half of the show, and I would like to welcome back Jim Crosby to the show. Hi, Jim.
Hi, I'm still here.
Bless you. I must admit, I've just had a mouthful of the cup of tea that Jamie made me, and it's a no-no. It was made for a two-year-old child, so I decided to say a no to it. Oh, my goodness. Now, where will I start next? I've just got to say, first of all, a big hello to Paige. That's obviously I've spoken to you about Jim, about Saving of Bandits. She is in the chat room, and she is saying, you know, about the fact that she's been waiting 3 years to get Bandit out of there. I've just seen somewhere else, and I'm just trying to move, see where it was. Nitro. Paige, if I can fight for justice for my dog Nitro for over 4 years now, so can you. Never give up. We are here for you and we'll support you. And do you know what, Jim? The support from all these people is amazing. You know, and this is what it's all about. It's about people actually connecting. And, you know, there's a few of them saying, you know, that they need to get connected. We need to start pushing to our politicians, to the police, to the local police, wherever we are in the world.
Yeah.
What?
And that's the answer is not sitting and trying to point fingers of blame at anybody, but getting everybody on the same, on at least beginning the same page and saying, what can we all do to make, in this case, not only the animals' lives safer, but the police officers' lives safer?
Yeah.
And I'm familiar with Bandit's case because I actually spoke to Bandit's attorney the other day, and we are going to be sharing more information on that.
Oh, do you know what, Jim? If I was in the U.S., I'd give you a massive hug right now. And I just want to say to everybody, this guy is amazing, right? And he doesn't blow his own trumpet, but this guy is absolute fantastic. If people, and he's going to shout at me for this, but if you've got an issue with the guns and the police have done stuff or there's anything, this guy is the one to talk to. He knows loads of people. And can I just say that I spoke to him the one day about Paige and about Sandy with Bandit, and the next day he was talking to them.
Yeah,
I was
fortunate enough that we were able to hook up pretty quickly, and like I said, their attorney has been out of town, but she was super in the fact that she called me from her vacation the next day to make sure that we connected, and she had the proper contact information so that we can talk further on this case.
Yeah. But the thing is, though, Jim, you are a busy person, but you make the time. I mean, I rang you up, and straight away I said to you about the show, and you did it. And I know you. Obviously, you're going to say to me, oh, it's my job, this is what I do. But there's people that go out of the lines of their usual job, and you do more than that. And I want to say to everybody in the chat room, this guy doesn't have to come on my show. He put out the time for me to do this show so we can get our voices out there. And this is the guy that can actually help us so much. Even though there is times that both myself and Jim are chucking things back at each other, and it sounds like we're supporting the police. We do to a certain degree, but also we don't accept the fact that these dogs are shot for no reason. And that is where Jim is coming in, because he is going to be putting these courses in place for the police, because it needs to be done. So for Jim to do this also, we need to help him too. If we start to get to the police and say to them, we need training for the police because this is wrong and that's happening and this and this, whatever, Jim comes in play with his course and they go, hold on a minute, we've had quite a few people saying about this. This might actually work and that'll get us off our back.
And
this is where we can all work as a team.
Yeah, and thanks for what you're saying, but I really appreciate it, and it's what I feel like I have to do that is important for me to do. But and on the training thing, I think it's very useful. I think I'm in kind of a unique position because I've been there, done that. I spent a career as a police officer, so I understand what's going on with them. I know what they're facing because I've been in the trenches and done the same thing. And so I think that gives us the opportunity where I can say, Okay, yeah. I know what your job is. I'm not trying to tell you to do something from the ivory tower. I'm telling you, with the mud on my shoes and the torn pants and everything, what I've seen myself. So I think that, and having that experience, whether it's with something like training like this or working with these dogs on dog attacks and so forth, I think this is, it's why I feel like I have to try and share this, because I can come from a place of not just of great ideas, but a practical experience, and try to help folks on both sides of the issue. And you know, in the same way, if I look at a case and you've got a case where a person has trained this dog to be dangerous and aggressive and blah, 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 and the dog went out and chased the policeman down and bit him, I'm fully willing to look at the person and go, hey, I feel sorry for the dog, but you need to go to jail because you're an idiot, and your dog was a victim of you, not the police officer.
Yeah. And the thing is, this is where I always get told off, but I'm going to sit on the police side for a minute. I am sure that if we spoke to whatever percentage of good police officers there are out there, they would appreciate the training, surely.
Absolutely. I've talked to officers who told me, we don't have this information. Where can we get it? I've got police officers contact me saying, what can I do? What are the resources out there? How can I find this? Not only with this use of force thing, but that's why I get contacted by departments with these serious attacks. They'll go, look, we've never had one of these. We don't know what we're doing. Can you help? And I'm always very happy to do that. So there are a lot of good, solid officers. I would say most of them are good, solid officers. And your good officers typically are the ones you find prowling the Internet and looking for sources and looking for new ways and are receptive to ways to do their job better and safer.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm going to go to the phone line, Jim, because we've got a couple of callers.
Good.
Right, let's go to area code 718. Hi, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, Sue. It's Liz, Nitro Foundation.
Hello, my darling. Massive hugs to you. You know what it's like.
Thank you, Sue.
Personal show. And listen to me.
Actually, I just have one more quick question for Jim.
Okay.
What if we put signage on our fences and gates and property? Would that have any influence on the police?
It should if they're using fence. Like I said, that's one of the things that we need to
reach like beware of dog. Would that make a difference to a police officer, let's say, before he jumps over my fence and goes into my yard?
If you've got a reasonable officer who's using his brain, yes, it should make a difference, because we should be teaching the officers, before you jump blindly, look and see, is there a beware of dog sign up there? Do you see a chain where somebody's had a dog chained up and maybe it's not now? Do you see a dog bowl, for crying out loud? Do you see dog poop when you look over the fence? You know, anything you can do to warn an officer, and I'm not even saying warning, because that kind of presupposes that your dog is somehow a negative issue, to alert an officer, hey, I've got pets here.
To alert them.
I'm sure we all
agree, you know, we're trying to protect our companion animals who may at the time just be in their yard on their property. And most dogs that I come in contact with, when it's their property, they are protective of it, and rightfully so.
Exactly. And what I was going to say is, a lot of us who have pets, we put stickers on our windows to let the fire department know there's pets inside that may need to be rescued. So putting a notice on your fence that, number one, if you're a police officer and you're coming in for something, you need to be aware there's a dog here. And number two, if something bad is happening, you need to be aware that there's a dog here, and maybe you need to be thinking about keeping my dog safe too. You know, if my house is on fire and the policeman's the first one there, and there's a beware of dog sign, and he looks around, and there's a doghouse next to the house, he may want to try to go in there. And, you know, there's a lot of police officers or dog owners and animal lovers. They may wind up actually scooping up your animal and getting it out of harm's way. So there's nothing bad on a practical basis to having some kind of notice that dogs live here.
Right. No, I'm just trying to think of different ideas so that these horrific things don't keep happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything like that's a good idea.
Nitro, can you just tell Jim what you're doing? I want you to tell people what you're doing with Nitro's Law.
All right,
maybe
what
Jim
I'm doing
stand
is
alongside
is
with you.
To tell you very quickly, long story short, due to a family emergency, our dog, Nitro, was in a kennel in Ohio. I'm a New York City resident. And he was being cared for by his trainer, kennel owner. The kennel owner, I don't know exactly what happened, but he obviously flipped out, and he starved 8 dogs to death. There were 12 more dogs there that were found, but they were clinging to life. What happened at that point is I was told by the prosecutor that animal cruelty in Ohio, no matter how horrific the abuse, is only a misdemeanor. So for the last 4 years, I've been working on with tons of Ohioans and people from all over the world to try to change the law in Ohio from a misdemeanor to a felony.
Excellent. And that's something that should be done across the country, because in way too many places the existent laws are insufficient in penalties for animal cruelty cases. And you also have prosecutors and judges who are reluctant to either pursue those cases or to sentence reasonably the people involved. I'm 1,000% behind what you're doing. And, for instance, last legislative session in the state of Georgia, I had input on, a friend of mine actually wrote the new responsible pet owners legislation in the state of Georgia, and we have upped penalties in the state of Georgia for such incidences. So you're doing a great job. Keep up.
Thank you. I do want to add one other thing before I hang up, and I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for this, but I'll say it anyway. Our son is a New York City police officer. And when he's an animal lover coming from our family. And when he went through training, he did come home several times and tell us that they received absolutely no training whatsoever as far as dogs are concerned.
And that's why we need to look at some of these cases and go, if we're not giving the guys the tools, then how are we expecting them to pull out of their butt a solution other than just simply blasting away?
For him to come home and say it definitely has to be a conversation at the house. And mm-hmm. I know he's doing his best to try to explain to them. I mean, we're Rottie pit bull people, you know, mm-hmm. by telling them that not all Rotties and pit bulls, of course, are out to kill you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to hear that your son's on the job in the city. My grandfather was a New York City cop, and my great-grandfather
It is tough here, Jim. So, I mean, I do understand both sides of the fence.
Yeah. Like I said, I go back to my great-grandfather was a cop in Jersey City. So we've been cops in my family for 6 generations.
Okay.
Like 140 years. We've had
We're a new police family, so this is a little hard on us.
Yeah. Bless you. You know what,
thank you so much, Sue, and thank you, Jim. And I will do all I can to raise awareness and mm-hmm. have people write to their police departments, and not only in New York, but in Ohio and everywhere, and their legislators. I mean, writing the legislators is very important.
And contact me if I can be of assistance in your efforts with Nitro's Law. You can get me at, spell the words out completely in lowercase, the word canine aggression, all run together, canineaggression@gmail.com.
Thank you so much.
That's if anybody wants to get in touch with me. It's canineaggression@gmail.com.
Nitro, I'll send you all the info on inbox, okay?
Thank you so much, Sue. Great show.
Nitro, I want to ask you one last favor. How do you fancy coming on the show next week? Me and you will do a show about nitro law.
That would be wonderful, Sue. Thank you.
Right, listen, I'll be in touch with you, okay?
Okay. Bye-bye.
You look after yourself. Thanks for calling in. Bless her. Obviously, another one that works so hard behind the scenes just trying to get things to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Right, let's go to the next caller. We've got area code 561. Hi, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sue. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. Who am I speaking to?
This is Justice Bully Boss in Kahlua.
Oh, massive hugs for you. This has been my star, Jim. She sent me all the links. And let me just say, caused me to have a Facebook ban for spamming via doing inboxes, telling people about the show.
Yeah,
how are you
I
doing, love?
I can hear who she was.
Now, how do you say, sorry, Justice?
Bully, Boss, and Kahlua.
Ah, okay.
Okay, tell us the story.
My husband was out of town on that particular day. It was August 14th, 2012. I was out doing some errands, and I came home in the afternoon. I had animal care and control in my driveway and police officers, you know, surrounding my driveway. I pull up. I get out. The cop comes up and says to me that they were here to arrest my friend and that they had to shoot my dogs, just like he had steak for dinner last night. And I do have a fully fenced 1.25-acre piece of property that does have beware of dog signs on the fence. They obviously knew the dogs were here. When they showed up to arrest my friend for a misdemeanor, they did not get invited onto the property. They just walked in through the fence, threw my friend to the ground. He asked them to get back out of the fence because the dogs were out. They waited for the dogs to run up, and they shot all three of them. The misdemeanor consisted of being arrested for a violation of a restraining order, which was taken out by his stepdaughter when she got upset with him because he got upset because an 18-year-old was dating a 42-year-old man. So this whole thing was over a phone call that he had made to her, and she called the police. And since she happened to know where he was going to be that day, she brought them here.
See, and that's where judgment has to start coming in. What part of the country are you in? I didn't recognize the area.
I'm in the U.S. I am in Florida.
Oh, you're here in Florida. Okay.
Yes.
I would say that you should think seriously about having somebody look into that case, because here you have the situation where it seems that there may have been a lack of judgment.
You think?
And you know... And again, all I know is what you're telling me here. I really don't know anything about the case, but you know, if there was a lack of judgment, a lack of reasonable action, then there should probably be some remedial action of some kind, whether it was the department internally or whether this was action taken legally from outside. If the department is not addressing it, then you should consider looking at other options of ways to hold people responsible, because the bottom line is, and the way particularly, mostly in most of the U.S., but particularly here in Florida, what happens because, you know, granted, dogs are considered to be property, and shooting your dogs means that the law enforcement agency has conducted what they call here in Florida a legal taking of your property. And there has to be justification for a police department to perform a legal taking. It's like they can't just walk up to you on the street after you run a red light and take your car away from you. They have to have proper reason. So that's probably something that you should reach out and have someone look into it and see what the situation is. And
we're already doing that.
We've
put in a complaint to internal affairs, which they were completely useless. They sent us a letter stating that their investigation is over, although they never sent anyone out to here to inspect the property or to speak to anyone. They didn't send anybody out here to speak to us. They sent us a letter stating that they could not prove or disprove our claim, and if we had any more information or evidence to submit, do so within the next 10 days, or it will be considered closed.
Okay, and so you need to pursue that a little further. I can tell you,
well, I have an attorney.
Having been a police officer here in Florida, there are some issues there. If they had a warrant, and if, depending on the information they were given, there would have been, under some circumstances, they would have had the legal ability to enter that property despite the signs, because
from what I'm understanding from Florida law, not on a misdemeanor, and they did arrest him. They put him in jail.
You've been misinformed, because if I look over and see somebody in a fence on a misdemeanor, and if I was still active as a police officer, and it's got do not trespass signs, and the guy standing in the yard and says, bite me, go away, too bad, so sad, you go to jail anyway. Now, if it's not based on a warrant or a court order, and it's just some kind of a minor misdemeanor that just happened, that's different. But if it's a warrant, then yeah, I can break down your gate or cut open your lock and come and snatch your smiling little face right off the
lawn. Well, yes, and I understand that my smiling little face on my property, but he did not live here. So even if they did have a warrant for his arrest, it was not for this address.
Doesn't matter. Under Florida law, it doesn't matter. They can go, if they see him inside the fence on your property, they can go get him off of it. So in that case,
well, then, in my opinion, that is giving you people way too much power, because I have nothing to do with that situation.
Right.
And the fact that they just kept him in jail overnight and let him out the next morning on his own recognizance, plus gave him time served, is enough to tell me that it wasn't a big enough crime to come in my yard and shoot my animals like that.
I agree. But the point I'm making is the simple fact that he was on your property, if there was a warrant for him, that they still have the authority to arrest there. Now, going and shooting your dogs is going another step that's a little bit ridiculous, and obviously from the punishment he didn't get, it wasn't such a big deal, which is where judgment of...
That's my point.
Is this worth, you know, if I, again, the illustration I use, if I'm chasing somebody or trying to grab somebody that shoplifted a candy bar, is it worth it for me to risk my life running through six lanes of rush hour traffic after the guy? No. Too bad, so sad. I'm not going to get killed by somebody driving down the road at 70 miles an hour just to catch a guy for a nickel candy bar. It's not happening. So the officers need to, you know, and you have to do it all the time. Officers have to judge, is this worth the cost? And in the case of animals, we have to think, is catching this person right now worth the cost of these two animals' lives? Is it even worth doing all the paperwork? And I would say no, because that case generated an unbelievable ton of paperwork. Forget the loss of the dogs and everything else. That, to me, from what you're describing, was not worth what they had to go through.
It wasn't worth what I had to go through. You know, as far as I'm concerned, my civil rights were stomped all over.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I'm simply, you know, boiling it down to the most basic, simple, crass, you know, base we can.
Yeah.
You know, my response to the officers then as a supervisor would have been, what were you guys thinking? You have created a huge mountain over what should have been an anthill.
See, please don't take this the wrong way when I say this, right? But let's just be on the other side of the fence. That guy that was the other side of the fence, I don't know what he did or anything, and I don't want to know what he did or whatever, but let's just say that somebody stole your car and you heard 3 days later the police saw him over a fence, but they didn't go to and arrest him because he was in somebody else's yard. Would you be happy?
I think that I probably would. This particular person has been arrested before, so they know where he lives.
Mm-hmm.
They know where he lives. They know what time he gets home from work. They know exactly where he's at. He's one of those people that do not like cops. You know,
he's a regular.
Yeah, no, he's not really a regular, but he just makes it pretty clear that he does not like cops. which he has every right to not like cops. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not a bad person. He's just been, you know, crapped on by them for so long, and it got to the point where they were harassing him on a daily basis, so he just started kind of fighting back. And, you know, he's not really a regular, but, you know, he does voice his opinion. But, I mean, that's, you're right. You have a right to voice your opinion.
Yeah. Please,
he
listen
doesn't
to
have
me.
To be
I
professional.
Am,
they do.
Can I just say to you that I am behind you 150%, right? All of these dogs, I am a dog lover. I've got three dogs myself. And do you know what? My heart goes to you. And if I could reach to you to give you a big, massive hug glove, I would. What I'm saying is criminals bring that on themselves too. He's got to have a certain amount of guilt for this as well. Let's go back a little bit further. Are the laws strong enough protecting us innocent people from criminals in the first place? If we've got decent laws out there that the police could put in force in the first place, then these people would be thinking twice before they went and did crime.
Right.
So it's such a big, massive umbrella. And this is what I try to say to people on the Ask Sue Show every single day.
And I understand that too. I do. But, you know, I'm looking at someone who did a day in jail, was let out on their own recognizance,
absolutely,
and given time served, that crime that they were after him for was certainly not worth destroying my family over, because I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I totally agree. What were the dogs actually like? Now, I'm not. How were they acting when the police actually went in?
Well, I do not know. I do know that how they do usually act when somebody shows up at the gate and they go running and barking to the gate. And, you know, Boss was a big boy, so he'd like to jump up to the top of the gate, you know, and say hi. But he never even got the chance to do that because they were in the fence, you know, already trespassing onto my property and just waiting for him to run up, and shot him as they were running up. Now, from what I understand, Boss, the big guy, got aggressive after he was shot the first time, you know, which is understandable. You pissed him off. You know, you injured him. Now he's mad. So that was the only time that he had gotten aggressive, according to my friend. And, you know, he's here a lot. He knows those dogs. Those dogs know him. They were friendly dogs. They've never bit anyone. I mean, I had five dogs on this property at one time, and they were all, you know, basically from the same family, and they all got along great. I never had dog fights. They just were not those kind of dogs. I didn't train them to be that way. I don't want a mean dog. I don't like mean dogs. I want my dog to, you know, respect me, love me, and love everybody else. I don't want a mean dog.
But the thing is, dogs automatically protect, and that's what the police need to understand. You know, at the end of the day, why on earth didn't they, before, like, jumping fences and trying to get in and shooting the dog, why didn't they at least talk to this guy and say, listen, there's going to be stuff going on. If you don't get out of there, we're going to have to come in, and then there's going to be real trouble.
Exactly, and I know him well enough to where if all they had to say is, Mr. Woodman, we're here to take you in, he would have walked outside the gate and given him he's never resisted arrest, ever. You know, so, you know, in the three or four times he's been arrested, he's never resisted arrest. There's no reason for them to come barreling through here like they did, because all they had to do was ask, and he would have taken himself off the property. That opportunity was never given.
So they never even asked him to come off the property or anything. They just charged in like bulls in a china
shop. Yeah, he never even knew that they were here until they were already 30 feet through my gate. And by the time he got up with his hands up, they threw him to the ground. And when they threw him to the ground, they started shooting.
So they'd actually got him, and that's when they decided. So they hadn't even give anybody a chance to even try to put the dogs away or anything else?
No. Nope.
Jim, what's the chances of actually being able to prove these police that they've done wrong? You know, how easy is it for us normal, I'm going to say normal folk, to be able to prove the police wrong? Is it easy to do?
It can be difficult because, you know, without any physical evidence, it's one of those he said, she said kind of deals. For instance, in the case in Colorado, we're fortunate that we actually have video of what happened, and that makes life a lot easier. In this particular case, there's quite several issues going on here, but for instance, I would have had them look at the bullet wounds to the dog, because and I've seen this in a case myself, so I can actually say that it's applicable. I had a case when I was in doing animal control where the person said that the dog charged them and they fired in self-defense. But when we did a necropsy on the dog, the fatal wounds came from behind the dog. They passed from back of the dog towards the front of the dog.
Yes,
and we shot in the back. And we recovered the slugs, and the weapon they said they used wasn't the same thing we recovered the slugs from. And so that made their case go right down the tubes, because there was physical evidence where I could show that their story didn't hold water.
Well, they've already given three stories on my account.
Yeah, that's where it can be important to have a necropsy by a veterinarian, which is the same as an autopsy. It's just on an animal instead of a human, where they take X-rays and document the injuries, and you can actually tell forensically at least what the physical evidence says. And like I said, in this case, for instance, you could tell whether the dog was shot coming at them or running away. Because if the dog was shot in the back, then I'm sorry. I have one of my dogs that, depending on his stomach condition, his south end can be kind of smelly. But I don't think him backing up towards me would justify me in shooting him.
Exactly.
As he might be peeling the paint off the walls. And if you're involved in such an unpleasant kind of situation, it can be important to think about, okay, what physical evidence is there? And if the police aren't collecting it, at least have somebody involved.
Right. I hired my own private investigator who's been out, and he did his own investigation. I'm not messing around with the department anymore, because, you know, Rick Bradshaw can get away with whatever they want.
Did you have a necropsy done on the dog's body?
No, I did not. I didn't even know anything about those. And at the time, like I said, I was home by myself. All I had here was my 16-year-old daughter, and I had three dogs, and the smallest one was 80 pounds.
Yeah.
So,
what did you do with the body of the dog?
They're all three buried in my yard.
Okay, they weren't cremated?
No.
Then you could actually pay somebody to come or you could have somebody physically exhume those dogs, even now 6 months later, and there is physical evidence that could be gathered from that exhumation and examination of the dogs' bodies.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that then.
There is still physical evidence that could be, as long as the dogs weren't thrown in a landfill or cremated.
No.
There's actually a course that I've been part of that is given to animal control. It's mainly meant for cruelty cases, but it's through University of Florida on how to do exhumations of animals and collect evidence. So it's not only possible, it's done on a regular basis.
Okay, I'll have to look into that.
Especially
then.
These cases where you find that somebody had, you know, 50 dogs that they've been burying in the back and they were starving them or whatever. Yeah, we can dig that stuff up and we can go through it. I've done it, and we can tell you what happened.
Okay, I can look into that then, because he did ask me, ma'am, what do you want us to do with the dogs? And I said, leave them here. I'll bury them. And he actually had the audacity to say to me, good, less work for us.
See, and that's an attitude problem that needs to be fixed.
I'm not being funny. I would have served time and I'd have just shot the twat myself.
I'm telling you, if I would have had my pistol on me that day, I probably wouldn't be here.
Didn't come to that, but you know, you're still not out to lunch on the evidence, because the evidence is still there.
Yeah, the evidence is still here. And somebody had even said to me, I'm surprised they let you keep the dogs because you have the evidence in your yard.
Yes.
They probably didn't think it through.
No, probably not.
Do you know what? I can just say to you, Jim, I think the biggest information I can say to people tonight is what you've just said in the last few minutes. If they've been shot, don't let them have their bodies. If your dog gets shot, do not let them take away your evidence and get those dogs, if they are, if they've already passed away or if they're injured or whatever, get them straight to the vet so that you can get the assessments done and you've got your evidence straight away.
And like I said, I would have loved to have done
it
differently.
Get an independent professional that's not tied to the police or particularly you. That
right.
way they can give you an objective report, and even if it's somebody you hired, it's still an objective, independent report
right.
that's based on the forensics, not on
right.
who says what. It's based
right.
on what's there.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what we've done so far. But like I said, I would have liked to have done things differently, but I was here by myself. I'm 105 pounds if I'm lucky. I have a 16-year-old daughter who's 82 pounds if she's lucky, and it was her and I, and I have a 120-pound dog, I have an 85-pound dog, and I have an 80-pound dog. I am alone. I had to call in for help. You know, I had to call one of my husband's friends to come over here and help me, because all I could think of is I have to get this cleaned up and taken care of before my husband gets home, or I'm going to have a dead husband, because he would have done just that. He would have gone to the police station, and I don't think he would have cared too much what happened after that. That's what I was afraid of. So I didn't
yeah.
have time to try to get three dogs loaded into whatever I could find, get to the vet. I was in such a state of shock, for one.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, all I
I'm
knew,
sure.
my husband could not come home to the massacre that had occurred in my yard, where there was blood from one end to the other inside my garage. One of my dogs had thrown up.
Oh,
I mean, it was the most disgusting, horrendous thing I had ever seen in my life. And those were my babies that were laying there. That's what killed me the most.
Do you know what,
uh-huh.
Jim? Can you just, I'm trying to juggle a chat room, and if I could give this poor woman a hug right now, I would, because I'll tell you what, everybody listening to me tonight, I promise you, right, we are going to have another show of this, because this is horrendous, and this should not be happening. But do you know what, Jim, I think I'm right in saying, I think if me and yourself, Jim, and you as well, I've forgotten your name on the phone, is it Liz? Sorry, what was your name?
Kathy
and Nitro, I think the four of us need to be able to put a list together of what, if people, first thing I need to ask, Jim, how long can the bodies be buried until it's too late to take their bodies back up to be able to get this evidence? Because I'm sure there might be people out there right now thinking, well, it's 12 months ago since mine, it might be too late. How long?
Depends on the climate. Here in Florida, they're going to decompose, especially down in South Florida, they're going to decompose sooner, but you're still in a window. The ones that the training is conducted on at University of Florida, those are in the ground for 6 to 8 months. The longer it goes, it depends on the kind of evidence. If it's recovering simply a bullet, even if the animal has become completely skeletal, the metal bullet is still contained within what used to be the physical outline of that animal and can be recovered. If there's injuries to bone, that will, you know, we can, or forensic anthropologists can look at murder cases from the Roman era and tell that some, or even before, and tell that somebody was hit over the head with a hatchet or something. Bone injuries last forever. Soft tissue stuff, it's much shorter. Recovering things like blood samples and so forth, it's much, much shorter. It just depends. If it was a case where the animal was in northern Minnesota and it happened just before the first freeze and the ground has been frozen ever since, then you've got a much longer window. So it depends on the case, on the climate, and on what evidence you're collecting. But you'd be surprised how much you can get, even substantially down the road, as far as physical evidence. Look, we do it with human murder cases all the time. People are exhumed years and even sometimes centuries later, and forensic autopsies are done on them, and there's an incredible amount of information that can be gotten. So it depends.
So what people need to realize, let's just very quickly for the ending of, I know we're coming to the end of the show, just everybody needs to realize that if your dogs have, this has happened to your dogs and you've buried your dogs, there is chance that there is still evidence that can be used. Obviously, very upsetting to take your dogs back up after this time, but, you know, if it means that proof and evidence and people can be done for this stuff, then so be it. But also, if this happens to anybody, what I'm going to do is I want to work with Nitro and Kathy and Jim, and maybe we can put a list of things that people need to do. You know, that if something like this happens, you know, obviously somebody gets it on Facebook and gets in touch with me or Nitro or Kathy or whatever and says, this has just happened, my dog has just been shot, what should I do? We need to be able to give them a list of what they need to do straight away, because some things are quite important, aren't they, Jim, to be able to do them as soon as possible.
Yeah, that's true. And remember, the other thing you have to be careful of is, you know, it's always an emotional issue. So we don't want to just automatically assume that the police officers are always wrong, because sometimes they're doing what they have to do. Approach it as, let's find out what happened, and if the police officer was justified, so be it. If the police officer was wrong, then let's fix the problem. We've got to, but yeah, that, you know, just like anything else, if, you know, even though I'm, again, a retired police officer, I'll tell you, especially if I haven't done anything, if I'm ever grabbed for something, the first thing I'm going to do is shut up and call my lawyer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's just simply what you do to protect yourself, whether it's right or not.
Which we all do.
I have seen situations where people have tried to get others arrested for things they didn't do just out of personal enmity, and the officer can only operate on the information they have in front of them. But like I said, whether I did something or not, the first thing I would do is shut up and call my attorney, rather than trying to talk it out and fix it. So, yeah, and I recommend anybody do that simply because there's always the possibility that somebody has set up that poor officer to do something that he wouldn't do if he had the full information, but you may make the situation work by trying to make it go away. Let a professional deal with it.
Right.
Yeah.
I have one
Jim,
other question
sorry.
For you, Jim.
Yeah, go on then, Kathy, because we've got another caller as well, so I'll fetch them in. Area code 712, you're on the line, but just hold on one moment. We'll just get Kathy to ask this question. Go on, Kathy.
Okay.
I was told by a neighbor and also by the gentleman that was here that approximately 15 rounds were fired off at my dogs. Now, 15
that almost
rounds.
Sounds to me like they need to go back to the range and learn to shoot better.
15 rounds. Now, I don't know how many actually hit the dogs. I think Boss was hit probably 4 or 5 times, and I'm not sure about the other two. But, you know, my question was, what if there had been a child running, you know, here and was running out there to see what on earth was going on and been hit by one of those 15 stray bullets?
There's a lot of what-ifs there, and, you know, all of those should be looked at because, you know, did the officer have what we call a proper backstop where he knew where those rounds were going? And was the backstop appropriate to make sure that nobody else got injured?
So the backstop is basically all the cars that were in my driveway.
And see, that again, that depending on the situation, that may or may not be appropriate because bullets bounce around and cars don't catch them all. And what if somebody was sitting in one of the cars? So there's a lot of what-ifs there that all need to be looked at collectively.
Yeah. Right. Sorry, can I have area code 712? Hi, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. This is Christine, the owner of Mary Jane that was shot by an officer.
Hi, Christine. I'm sorry to have left you so long. We've got 4 minutes. Now, I have said to everybody, we will be having another show a week today. Christine, we'll see how much we can get through. If not, you can come on the show next time as well, okay?
That's fine.
Okay, go on, Christine.
Well, I mean, luckily my dog actually survived the shooting. It happened August 26, 2012. Try to make a long story short. My 9-year-old stepson had taken her out to the yard along with our two little mini weenie dogs to go to the restroom. The officer was supposed to be going to a supposedly vandalism on a house next door, but instead of him going to the house, he walked directly into our yard and shot our dog, which was basically about 5 feet directly in front of my 9-year-old stepson. So he was in the line of fire, basically. And we have proof she was shot in the yard. She, after the shooting, she crawled out to the street towards him, basically what the neighbors said, for help, and where there's blood. So there was she flopped around, so there was blood, ended up being in the street. Well, when the chief showed up, because there was blood in the street, he took the police's story. They didn't investigate. They said they were going to investigate. They never investigated, never asked anybody any questions, anything. And we got a note in the mail saying that the investigation was over and we were being charged.
Quick question. Did they take pictures of the entire crime scene and the blood at the time of the incident?
No, the only blood, the only pictures they took was the one blood spot that was in the street, which there was blood everywhere. I mean, I don't understand why they took. And then they took a picture of her off the internet from, she was on television, where it showed, to me, dry blood on her nose where she was shot at.
Mm-hmm.
And said it was, from the bullet that proved supposedly it was close up or something. I don't know. But, yeah, they did not take pictures of it anywhere. And her teeth were blown out of her mouth, and they was blown out around her in the yard. We took pictures of this, took the teeth and everything. They would not let us use any of this in court, would not let us use the picture. She was standing right next to our driveway in the yard, and our truck was right next to her when she had gotten shot. Her blood was all over the truck.
Yeah, all the documentation of the blood in the yard and the truck and the teeth and everything else that should have been acceptable and looked at by somebody, because
they wouldn't allow it.
Even just drag marks. You can look at.
I have pictures of drag marks where she drug herself into the street. I have pictures of that as well, and they would not allow that in court.
I see that. That is evidence that should have been, and I don't know why they didn't, but drag marks, blood marks, I can look at blood and tell you what direction it came from as far as splatter marks and also drag marks and smear. You can tell the difference between blood that's dropping down and blood that's been transferred. So there's a lot of potential physical evidence there that sounds like we should have been considered. I don't know why, but it should have been considered.
Yeah, and then on top of it, the officer used his own personal .45 gun, and after the fact, my stepson was hysterical and was screaming, she's bleeding all over, and he looks at my son laughing, saying, yeah, because she's got a .45 slug stuck in her ass. And we had many witnesses that heard this, and they wouldn't even allow that in court, and they wouldn't allow my stepson to go to court to testify.
It sounds like you need to take it another step. Because whatever court you went to wasn't far enough.
Well, yeah, we asked for a judge that wasn't in our town. And
Christine,
they were supposed to go that morning, and they waited to the afternoon so they had their judge.
Christine, I'm sorry. We've come to the end of the show. Jim, thank you very much for joining the show. I'm sorry we're down to the very last seconds. Thank you very much to everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.